Welcome to the Brew News Podcast, all the news that's fit to be brewed. I'm Andrew Jennings.
And I'm Travis Matherly. Join us as we go a little bit deeper behind the breweries of your favorite beers and learn about new breweries from around the world.
We will be exploring the history and beers of craft brewers and hope to showcase the amazing talent and variety found within the craft beer community, both in the U.S. and abroad.
This week, we'll be taking a look at Yingling Brewing out of Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Andrew, thoughts on Yingling?
Big brewery, had a lot of their, I've drinking a lot of their beer in terms of quantity, but I don't think they make a lot of different stuff.
They definitely do not. No. Yeah, they are a pretty big brewery. Do you remember your first time?
Honestly, Yingling is just sort of ubiquitous with college for me. Most of my, I do remember getting wasted on Yingling. No, that wasn't Yingling. That was something else.
I was going to say, that'd be really hard to do. You would have to drink a lot of Yingling.
I think I got wasted on Smittix. Someone got a keg at a party and we just went to town on it, but it doesn't matter. That's not here nor there. No, Yingling.
You and your band people.
Actually, that wasn't my band people.
I know it was.
It wasn't.
Oh, was it?
I had other friends. Oh. No, the band people drank mostly Coors Light.
Oof. All right. Well.
Silver bullet. I think, what about you, Travis?
let's see. I think Yingling, probably the first time I had it was high school. Telling on myself there. But yeah, I just thought about that when I said it. But no, a buddy of mine, like his parents, always kept it around. A couple, one or two, may have not been consumed. Not that we encourage underage drinking on the show, because we don't, if anybody from the government is listening.
However, if you are in the government, we would recommend you reconsider your current alcohol laws, as they are very stringent and they're not necessarily the best. We've created a problem in our country where we look down on drinking and treat it as something that can't be explored in the home by families and friends. So instead, you pick up bad drinking habits when you go to college. Think about that. You could save people by allowing underage drinking.
If you allowed it, it wouldn't be underage.
If it's not taboo. Yeah. I guess, yes. What I'm saying is it's not taboo.
I was going to say, by outlawing underage drinking, then it wouldn't be underage drinking. Then you would just...
It depends. I mean, it's underage. Technically,
not if you change the age.
But if you change the age to 50, we'd be underage drinking.
No, we're not. Yeah, you're getting off in the weeds there. Anyways, besides Andrew's unassumed rant there on the drinking age.
It's not my fault.
Let's see. Let's just go ahead and dive.
Yeah, let's just get into Yingling.
Yeah, let's just get into the history of Yingling. You've really thrown me right now.
Yingling is America's oldest operating brewery. It was founded in 1829 by David Gottlieb Jungling. Yes, it's still pronounced Yingling, but they changed the spelling.
Yingling.
It was originally spelled with a J, but now we spell it with a Y. Is that right? Or did you mistype that?
No, that's how he spelled it. If you go down a few bullets, you'll see when he changed it.
Fair enough. I'm sorry. I know when he changed the company name. But yes, David Yingling came over. He was DG. That was his nickname. He was a German brewer who immigrated to America in 1828. He was from Oettingen, Germany, just outside of Stuttgart. And this was originally founded as Eagle Brewery, on Center Street in Pottsville, Pennsylvania.
Which is why all of their beer bottles and cans feature an eagle.
A bald eagle. An American eagle.
An American eagle, not a German eagle.
German eagle. Yeah, let's not talk about German eagles.
Yeah, you can't.
I mean, you could up until about 1938.
Yeah. Well, Eagle Brewery, like Andrew said, was located on Center Street in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Pottsville was a coal mining town at the time.
There we go.
And the first two beers that Eagle Brewery made were the Porter and the Lord Chesterfield Ale, which are actually both still brewed to this day. So that is, almost
200 years of continuous brewing of a particular beer. It's about 100...
Not continuous.
Well, the Porter and the Chester. Yeah, you're right.
They're we'll get into that
yeah,
later.
Yeah, you're right. Yep. They're cyclical. You're right. Mm-hmm. Something, prohibition, something.
But they have
something.
A 200-year history.
Yes, they do have a 200-year history with those beers. Yeah. So we know we have beers that are at least 200 years old, which is pretty cool. The original brewery burned down in 1831, and it was relocated to Mahatonga Street.
Where it still stands to this day. In 1873, the name changed from Eagle Brewery to D.G. Yingling & Son, after DG's other son, Frederick, joined the company in 1873.
This was Froderick?
Yeah, not Froderick. Friedrich. No, this was... and I wrote that, and it reminds me that when I said his other son, Frederick...
He had another son? He had two Fredericks?
No, he had a couple of sons. What happened was, I can't remember the other son's name, one of his sons left to make his own brewery in down near, I think it was Richmond. And apparently in Richmond or it's Roanoke because it was on the river.
Oh, okay.
I forget the name of the brewery that he made. I put it in there and then I got confused with the history. I originally thought that that was the brewery that burned down, not Yingling's brewery.
Okay.
But the caves where he cellared his beer are, and parts of the brewery are overgrown, but they're part of a National Historic Site on the river still. Pretty down cool. in Roanoke somewhere, I think. Yeah, you can actually still see them. So that son left and did his own brewery. I don't know when it closed or what happened to it, but he was no longer involved with the company.
He did have a son named Frederick. That's what it was.
So Frederick joined the company in 1873. And then during the late 19th century, they opened breweries in both Sarasota Springs, New York, and Trail, British Columbia, Canada, which is really interesting that they shot pure across the country and then up into Canada to open another brewery.
And it's really interesting because of what happened more recently.
Yeah.
However, those breweries were both eventually closed, and they've merged back with the OG, the second G location.
Yeah.
In Mahatonga Street.
Mahantonga.
I don't know. I'm done trying this one. DG died in 1877, leaving the company to Frederick. Frederick added a bottling line in 1895.
The Industrial Revolution.
Yay!
Hooray, mechanization.
Beer for the masses! And then Frederick died in 1899, and he left the brewery to his only son, Frank.
Frank.
Frank would be with a C, normally.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Doesn't matter.
Would you say it's a Francophone? The brewery has since been passed down through the family, with the sons buying the brewery from their fathers before their fathers pass away. So before DG died, he sold the company to Frederick. Frederick then sold the company to his son Frank before he passed away, and so on and so forth. And Frank begot, and so DG begot Frederick, and Frederick begot Frank.
it's like numbers all over again. Well, as we've sort of hinted at, this brewery was around, started in the 1800s. What happened in about 1919 in America, Travis?
Well, let's see. The title of my bullet point says Prohibition Leads to Innovation.
Fancy.
So I would think it's Prohibition.
Prohibition! Look at that. Yeah, Prohibition hit the U.S. hard, and there was a huge movement in the early 1900s to prohibit spirits. And ironically, this came about...
Not ghosts, but alcohol.
Actually, they're ghosts. It's a misnomer in the language. We were trying to outlaw ghosts, but everyone just assumed they meant alcohol. It was weird.
They didn't want another Salem witch trial?
Apparently not. I don't know. But no, they were trying to outlaw, and it wasn't actually beer's fault. Beer just got caught up in the
liquor boom?
Yeah, it was because of liquor, actually.
It was the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm. Causing problems.
All that gin.
Yep, gin. Cheap gin. Ooh, it's like the heads or tails from moonshine, too. It was like bad stuff. Like,
Well, I don't like gin in the first place, so.
But I like gin. But Prohibition hit in 1919 with the 18th Amendment. As we all know, that didn't stick too long, but stuck long enough. It stuck almost 20 years.
Yeah, that's long enough. That's an entire generation of beer drinkers.
Yeah, it really did. It did have a huge problem.
Yeah. That was dark days for beer and alcohol lovers because of those damn teetotalers.
You darn teetotalers!
Which Andrew and I both have,
Teetotaling.
I think, teetotalers in our family.
Yeah. They're at least a generation or so removed, but yeah. So Yingling adapted, as most large breweries did too, to survive this period. They started producing their near beers, which only were 0.5% alcohol.
I think when I was reading that, by Prohibition standards, that was the most alcohol that could be in any beverage.
Oh my lord, Travis. Mm-hmm. Oh my, this beverage is just too boozy for me.
It's too strong. I do believe I've got the vapors. This included the Portor, P-O-R-TOR, the Yingling Special.
And which you can still get these days, but it's off menu, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. And the Juvo, I believe I'm saying that right. I don't know what that one was. During this time, though, because selling of near beer, I mean, while people went for it because it was the only kind of alcohol they could get legally, Yingling also had another idea. They constructed and operated a dairy directly across the street from the brewery to make money selling ice cream and milk. The ice cream was absent for about the last 30 years, but was reintroduced in 2014. It is a legally separate entity from Yingling Beer since 1935, and is actually run by one of the cousins, David Yingling, who is a direct descendant of DG himself.
I just love this. This really is a family-owned operation.
Oh, yeah. They keep it in the family.
This is really very much like the mafia of breweries. So they also opened dance halls in Philly and New York.
Where I'm sure they sold their near beers.
And
ice cream. Ice cream socials.
Yes. And I think, if I remember correctly with Prohibition, they could have charged a cover and given away beer legally.
Because then wouldn't that be like a speakeasy?
No, because you're not charging for drinking. You're charging for the dancing.
Yeah, but alcohol was still illegal.
It was illegal to buy and sell alcohol. It's just like U.S. North Carolina laws when it comes to
Yeah, but then shine. They would bust the people who were giving the beer away because but they had to have bought it. No, but they had to have purchased it.
Not if it's Yingling. It was not illegal to make it. And if Yingling owns the dance hall and Yingling is charging you to come in to dance at their hall, I don't know how this beer got in my hand. I'm not saying they did this. I'm saying it was legal.
You obviously know a lot more about Prohibition than I did.
Look, I'm ready for the next one. I'm just saying.
We know how to brew beer now ourselves.
Yeah, we're ready for this thing.
Yeah.
But when Prohibition ended in 1933, they brewed a beer called the Winter Beer, and they shipped a truckload of it all the way to the White House to show their appreciation to President Roosevelt.
FDR.
I know.
What a guy.
Not my favorite Roosevelt.
He should be for that reason.
Eleanor, baby.
Eleanor. Lady Bird. That's Lady Bird Johnson. That's Lyndon Johnson's wife.
Oh, all right. So, 1933, they're still kicking. They're doing well. And then they had some trouble in 1963.
Yep. Supply and demand leads to withdrawal, then expansion. Frank Yingling dies in 1963. That's a pretty good run as the head of the brewery since his father only ran it for...
22 years. His dad ran it for 22 years. Frank ran it from 1899 to 1963.
Yeah. His dad only ran it from 77 to 99.
That's a good run.
That's 1899 to 1963.
64 years.
That's doing it.
Yeah.
Frank Yingling dies in 63, leaving the brewery to his sons Richard Sr. and F. Dorman.
F. Dorman.
F. Dorman Yingling. In 1985, Richard L. Yingling, also known as Dick Yingling,
assumes he's the Richard Jr.?
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Richard Jr., or Dick, assumes control of the company the same year the brewery is added to the National Historic Registry. Dick Yingling then introduces the Yingling... reintroduces... I'm getting there. I'll get it. Reintroduces the Yingling Amber Lager in 1987... which will become their flagship.
The Amber Lager is exactly as old as I am.
The reintroduced version.
The reintroduced version.
Yeah. Amber Lager 2.0.
It's just better than the
other. That was just the first time they'd made it since Prohibition.
Yeah. So they did this in order to take advantage of a spike in interest for these, quote, heavier beers. Yeah, about...
As we get into the tasting this evening, you'll see what they considered heavy beer back in 1987.
Yeah. So these Amber Lagers accounts for 80% of their production. Is that today?
Yes.
Still today. So their standard...
Yingling traditional lager by itself accounts for 80% of the beer that Yingling makes.
I believe that.
Because that's about the only one that you see everywhere.
Yeah. So in the early 1990s, they had a problem. So supply, they had a certain amount of supply.
Outstripped demand.
No, demand outstripped supply.
True that.
So Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware alone outstripped the company's capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So they pulled in their distribution until in 1996, just so they could make enough beer to satisfy at least someone.
So they withdrew their distribution for markets outside of their local area. In 1990, they produced 138,000 barrels. So if that tells you anything, demand was over 138,000 barrels. Well, you're saying that was in three states.
And that's still really big for, like, even our breweries today, like Dogfish Head is only 200-some thousand barrels. Mm-hmm.
They were actually the largest producer of porter in the country at the time.
I believe that because no one else is making porter.
Yeah. But then, so they withdrew in 1996. By 1999, they expanded again. And in 1999 and 2000, they expanded by purchasing Stroh Brewing Company. Stroh, did I say that right? Stroh Brewing Company in Tampa, Florida, and another production facility that they built in Mill Creek, Pennsylvania, only 3 miles from the original brewery. They could now meet their demand and supply the entire East Coast with beer.
Yep, and just the East Coast. Their distribution currently, Yuengling is largely only distributed on the East Coast, east of the Mississippi River.
Oh man, you're not going to read my... Read the bullet.
I will read the bullet when I feel like reading the bullet. So, the bullet is distribution and Dick being, well, a dick.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you said that we're finding that most of their distribution is east of the Mississippi River. I have a friend who moved out to San Diego, and he tells a story that he was at this bar, and they had Yuengling, and that's his go-to beer. So he's ordering Yuengling. And some girl walked up to the bar and said, "Give me one of them Janglings."
Janglings.
So we've always called it Jangling since then.
Well, since you're going to tell that story, I have a good one. So some friends of ours that recently got married, I was not there that evening. It was back, I think, maybe before Courtney and I were even dating. A friend of ours who's a hairdresser and loves his Long Island iced teas. Knew that our buddy drank Yuengling all the time. So they were out at a bar, and Yuengling was on special that night. It was like $2 Yuenglings or something. And he looked back, and he said, "They've got Ding-a-ling on draft for $2. So now we just call Yuengling Ding-a-ling when we want to.
Oh, well, as of 2018, all of our listeners in Little Rock can get themselves a Yuengling, because they expanded into Arkansas in 2018, and they introduced their first seasonal lineup in 2009.
Fun fact, how did I not write that down?
Well, you can tell our listening audience.
Yeah. The expansion into Arkansas was, I believe, by the flip of a coin. Yuengling touted on their Instagram back at the beginning of the year, according to the article I was reading, that they were going to expand into a new state, whether it was Kentucky, Texas, Arkansas. Wait, am I thinking of the wrong brewery?
I don't know what you're talking about. Thinking about Clown Shoes, maybe?
No. No. I'm almost 100% sure it's Yuengling, where they touted that they were going to move into a market. They were going to pick a state to expand into.
Huh.
People thought it was going to be like Texas, and they picked Arkansas.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good for Arkansas.
Yeah. I want to say for some reason that Kentucky also started buying Yuengling.
I'm certain Kentucky did, because they're right next to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
That would be a missed
opportunity. This could be another brewery. Who knows? It's a mystery.
This is what happens when you do a lot of research.
Yeah. Maybe I've gone off into a tangent about another brewery. I've done way too much research.
Yeah. So since 2009, they've been producing 2.8 million beers annually. This is, you may remember from our Sam Adams episode, that Sam Adams produces 4.8 million barrels, yet Yuengling is somehow magically bigger. It's because Sam Adams has a giant portfolio, and that 4.8 number includes all their other sub-brands.
Yeah, so if you go back and listen to the Sam Adams episode, you know that that includes Angry Orchard, Twisted Tea, the Traveler series.
Truly.
Truly, all of their...
Or the White Claw.
No, they're Truly.
They're Truly.
The ANS...
Yeah,
brewing that controls four other brewers. So that all of that is lumped into their 4.8 million. Yuengling solely produced 2.8 million barrels of Yuengling since 2009. And based on 2016 sales volume, Yuengling is the number one craft brewery in America. Though they do not feature, as far as I'm aware, the Independent Craft Brewers Association bottle on their label.
Yeah, we didn't really get into their corporate structure.
But well, that's...
Or because they're independently owned, but they may not be part of that for a host of reasons.
Well, I think we can figure out why when the second part of that bullet point, Dick being a dick.
Oh, yeah.
So, speaking of Dick being a dick, Dick Yuengling has no sons and will transfer control of his company to one of his four daughters in the near future.
Gonna have to change that name, baby.
It'll be
DG Yuengling and kids
and offspring. Well, so he's got four daughters. One of them, who he hasn't named publicly, will get a controlling interest of the brewery, and his other three daughters will have minority shares in the company. Yuengling has sparked some controversy in recent years. Now, when I say controversy, it's kind of controversy, but it's interesting for the craft beer community. Yuengling deunionized their workers in their Tampa facility in 2006, which led to a boycott of the beer by the Teamsters Union. So when Yuengling bought Stroh Brewing in Tampa, their workers, it was an already operating brewery.
Right.
They kept the workers in the facility who were already unionized, and then when their union deal came to re-up, they canceled it and said, "You guys are no longer in a union. We don't believe in unions."
Huh.
Tough nuts.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And Dick's clearly been involved in this before, because he has been politically outspoken. He's trying to turn Pennsylvania into a right-to-work state. Now, you and I both live in right-to-work state, North Carolina.
Yep.
And I can see both sides of an argument on that one, but I don't know how he's going to do on that.
Yeah.
And then he even sparked more controversy.
Controversy. You've slipped back into the Prohibition years and become a mobster.
More controversy after another smaller boycott after his endorsement of Donald Trump in 2016.
Now, for those of you listening to the show regularly, you know we don't get into politics, but I thought it was noteworthy of that because he came out in support of Donald Trump, which led to a boycott of his beer. And you know what a funny thing was, some of the guys that I work with, one of them mentioned it and said this guy he knew who was ultra-conservative was like, yeah, that Yingling, I don't drink that imported European crap anyways. And he was like, you know Yingling's made in America, right? And he's like, no, it's some of that dang European beer and that da-da-da-da-da. And they're like, well, bud, I hate to tell you, but it's made in Pennsylvania. So it's a... fun times.
Oh, gosh. It's a green bottle.
And the only reason I wrote all of that stuff in was solely for the fact that that's not extremely common within the craft beer community for people to get out. Like, beer, to me, always seems like this kind of... Well, we talk about breweries that have charities and nonprofits and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's kind of the kind of thing that, like, anybody and everybody can get behind and support a nonprofit or a charity for... clean water or for, you know, kids or diseases and things like that. It's very rare to see somebody in the community step out into the political sphere and have very, what some people might call polarizing political views and to express them at the risk of your company, because beer is always, to me at least, seen as this neutral thing.
Yeah. I know the most politically active brewer in our area, he's politically active about one particular subject.
Beer.
And he gets into some things. He has a big sign on I-40 that I used to drive by daily. And he'd have different messages up. But almost every single one of them is about beer. And he's politically active because he's trying to get North Carolina legislature to free craft beer more than it already has. So, like, that's a kind of, like, political message we usually see brewers getting behind. Mm-hmm. We see them getting behind environmental things. We see brewers getting behind other things. Usually the opposite of right-to-work states. They're trying to create more of a, you know, feel within the community. That's part of it. They're usually more community-driven than corporate-driven.
It's a very big detour from, like, people like New Belgium being an employee-owned company where everybody has a stake here. We value everybody. And then you have this... guy who says, well, I don't believe in unions and I believe in right to work, so if you're going to work for us, you're not a union guy anymore. I thought it was noteworthy and something that you don't see really hardly ever in the beer community.
Well, let's talk about what else you hardly see whatever in the beer community, and that's a variety of Yingling beers.
Yeah. So, to be America's largest craft brewery, Yingling only brews, get ready for this number, because it's astounding, 9 beers.
You meant 900 beers, right?
I meant 9. 90? As in one less than 10.
19?
Nope. Take the one away from in front of the 9. They brew less than 10 beers.
Oh, that's crazy.
To be the largest craft brewery in America and you brew less than 10 beers is insane. So, 9 beers. What's the math on that? Real quick.
Well, 9 beers, 80% of it's traditional lager, 2.8 million barrels, 80% of, I'll do the math fine. You keep talking.
Yep. So, of Yingling's 9 beers, the majority of them are year-round. Actually, all of them but one are year-rounds. Andrew, do you have the math?
2.24 million barrels of that are traditional amber lager. That would mean that the other 0.56 barrels... million barrels, so 560,000 barrels are the not lager.
And I would say probably a good portion of that
is the light lager.
Or the Oktoberfest. Well, a decent portion once a year.
We got to remember, they're distributed almost exclusively east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, that's still, though. That is insane to think that 2.4 million of that is just one beer.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'll let Andrew talk about the year-rounds now that he's done crunching the numbers for us.
All right, so they have the traditional lager, traditional amber lager. We'll get into it in a minute. The light lager, which is a lighter version of their traditional.
We're also having that this evening.
The black and tan.
Having that one.
The porter.
Couldn't find that one.
The golden pilsner.
Having that one.
Lord Chesterfield Ale.
Never seen it before, but would love to actually try that and get my hands on it.
Yep. Premium beer.
Never seen it.
Sorry, that's just a great, that's a ridiculous name. And then they have Yingling Light, not to be confused with the light lager.
Wait, which one are we having?
The light lager.
Oh, man. Now that I think about it. Yeah, okay, I've seen Yingling Light before. I didn't.
Yeah, apparently they're different. I don't know how, but they also...
Yeah, how is that different? Never mind.
Well, it is. I saw it on this... It was filling out some parts of our tasting tonight, and yeah, there's Yingling Light and Light Lager. I had to double check myself to make sure I was doing the right one.
It's got to be almost the same thing. And then let's dive into their seasonals real quick, and I mean real quick. We have the Oktoberfest. Yep, that's Yay! It. That's the only one. That is their only seasonal. Yingling brews all of their beers year-round with the exception of the Oktoberfest, sticking true to style. They release that one once a year. Other than that, you can get all their beer year round.
Yep.
We can take a second to talk about some of their discontinued beers, though.
All five of them.
Mm-hmm. Which is over 50% of what they brew today.
It's a third.
They've quit more beers than they have. Wow. They had the Yingling Bock, which actually I would have liked to have tried, but it was discontinued twice. Once in the 1970s and then again in 2015. So that is really recent.
Yeah.
They also have the Summer Wheat Beer, which was discontinued in 2017, and the IPL, which I distinctly remember seeing up until last year, as that one was also discontinued in 2017. These were both replaced by the Golden Pilsner that we'll be having tonight.
Yep. And then they have the Old German. They discontinued, but it's still made by Iron City Brewing in Pennsylvania.
Haven't we mentioned Iron City Brewing before? I think with Sam Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they also discontinued the half and half. This was half porter, half Lord Chesterfield Ale.
Sounds regal.
It does.
That's the only reason I want to drink it.
And this was that was replaced by the Black and Tan in 1986.
Yeah, so that was quick. Really a lot of their discontinueds. They have three in the last 3 years.
And a lot of them are just replaced by something else, which is interesting.
Well, not the Bock, but yeah, the Summer Wheat and the IPL.
Yeah, and the half and half were all replaced by something else. Let's get into that something else and start drinking. What do you say?
Yeah, I think that's enough history.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try more than 50% of Yingling's beer tonight. Our first beer this evening will be the Golden Pilsner. This is listed as a Pilsner Other, coming in at 4.7% ABV. No IBUs available. Yingling calls this a modern Pilsner crafted with the perfect balance of hop and malt character. It's sessionable and full of flavor.
How is it Pilsner Other? Pilsner's a style.
It's not a Czech Pilsner. It's not an American Pilsner. It's an Other?
Other?
German Pilsner?
Germans? Yeah, Germans can make Pilsners.
Yeah, that's actually... Wait, is that... That's a legit...
A Pilsner is originally... It's an Austrian. It's a Vienna style. It's originally a Bohemian. A Bohemian Pilsner.
That's actually got a pretty good nose on it. That's a lot more than I was expecting it to have.
Your nose must be doing better than
mine. Andrew's a little congested today, it seems like.
I'm congested every day.
You definitely smell the malt and the hop working together on that. It smells... It's actually a better smelling Pilsner than most of the Pilsners we've had.
If you had handed this to me, I would have assumed you had handed me the Yingling. Like, the regular lager.
That is close to being traditional lager.
It's a little lighter. I'm looking at the two right now.
It is golden.
Yeah, it is golden, but it tastes almost like Yingling Light or Yingling Lager. Which we'll get to shortly.
That is...
I'm going to have to hang on to this just so I can do a comparison when we get to the others.
It is a little hoppy.
It is for a Pilsner.
Yeah, for a Pilsner, that's fairly hoppy. I'd be interested to know what the IBUs are on that.
Based on everything else that they make, I'm going to say less than 30.
Because... Yeah, as you look down the list, nothing they make really is... overly bitter.
Well, let's go to their poppiest beer then.
The Marzen!
This is Yingling's Oktoberfest, their take on a good German classic, as any good German brewery needs. Ironically, their brewery started before the Marzen style existed. If you didn't know when the Marzen style existed, check our Oktoberfest episode.
Yeah, that one just clicked in my head, though. I didn't make that connection when I was writing all of this.
Well, it is a 5.4% ABV, pretty standard Marzen. 26 IBUs, standard Marzen.
Yeah.
An homage to their heritage, yet again. They left Germany before this existed. But
they're paying tribute to their German roots.
Yep. And it's medium-bodied in a perfect blend of roasted malts with just the right amount of hops. A true representation of the style.
And they do have very nice German script on the bottle.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And it's their only... It's still got their eagle on it, but it's the only eagle that's actually in full color.
Yeah, it's a full... It's the full thing with a nice orange background. They're really playing into that fall theme. And yeah, you're right. It's the only eagle that's got color. It's not sort of a relief faded out eagle. It smells like an Oktoberfest.
That smells very caramel. Like, even more so than some of the other ones.
Like the Great Lakes?
It smells a little sweet, actually.
Which is what I'd expect from a Marzen. And it tastes, I'd say, a little sweet, too.
Yeah, that is just a touch sweet. It is definitely roasted malts, but... Mm-hmm. You know, for an Oktoberfest, I think that might, just for me personally, be a touch too sweet.
Yeah, it's definitely not my favorite. It's sweet, but it's sweet like sugar. It's sweet, not like the caramel. Great Lakes was sweet, was with more that caramel flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this isn't a... it's not necessarily from the roast. They may have put... I don't know. It depends on what kind of malt they're using, though.
Yeah.
But I would imagine they're using pretty traditional malt.
Probably using Munich or caramel malt, something like that. But and it's the darkest of the non-black and tan beers that we're drinking. It's just a shade darker
than the traditional lager.
It is the hairiest of hairs darker. But and then the black and tan, of course, is our darkest that we're drinking tonight.
I mean, I do like that. It almost slightly reminds me, like, it has this little bit of a spice note tinge that almost verges more on a pumpkin beer.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah, I can see a little bit on that back end. Yeah.
And that malt, or I mean, that hop actually does come through at the end, though, on that. So it is just the littlest bit bitter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, that's good. But I don't know if I could drink more than probably a couple of those.
I feel that was festivus. That was festivusing.
If you were...
That was at a fest?
If you were partaking in a festival?
Yes, sure. Like, festivizing.
not feasting, but festing.
But festing, yes. If we were festing, I could fest that beer all day. But I don't know if I'd want to.
I think you could fest any of Yingling's beers all day because they're all under 6% alcohol.
You and I have both fested Yingling beers all day before.
Yes, we have. And there's always, like I've said, a case of Yingling in my fridge because it's just an easy... One, it's cheap. And it's still a decent lager.
Mm-hmm.
And it works for when you're mowing the yard, doing any kind of yard work or outside doing something. And it's just easy to get in there and grab it.
And lagers typically are good for that. They're good for that hot weather. I just want something easy to drink because they're usually a little cooler. They're not hoppy. They're not bitter. They don't bite you like some pale ales will.
Mm-hmm. And I can buy a case of it for
$13 if you play your cards right.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I go to Costco, I can get it for, like, a 24-pack for, about $13-$15. Yeah. Of bottles, not even cans.
But I prefer the cans. I know I'm weird. I know I am the weirdo on that one. I don't mind drinking out of a bottle. I just, if I'm going to keep it in my fridge, though, cans are just packed so much.
I don't know. I kind of actually just prefer Yingling in the bottle. Even though, we'll talk about that in a second, the Yingling traditional is in the green bottle.
Mm. Speaking of.
Yeah, speaking of the traditional lager. Let's move on to that one. Third up is the Yingling Traditional Lager, or their flagship beer. This is actually classified as an American Amber / Red Lager. It's only 4.5% ABV, 16 IBUs, medium-bodied flavor with roasted caramel malt, a combination of cluster and cascade hops. A true classic.
So, in our Marzen episode, we talked about how Marzens are called many, 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 many things.
Mm-hmm.
Amber Lager is one of their...
names?
Their AKAs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Yingling Traditional Lager is probably verging on that of a Vienna Lager?
Yeah, I'm going to say. And like you said, it is in the green bottle, and the particular one we're drinking on the nose has a little bit of that skunk to it.
Yep.
And that's what I typically expect from green bottle beers like the Heineken, the Heinekens of the world.
But do you think that's on purpose? Like, it's part of it? Because that is Yingling's only beer that's in a green bottle.
It may be part of it. It may honestly be part of the... I mean, it's also...
It's probably part of the spotting thing, too.
Yeah. It's probably part of the charm to try and, you know, oh, it's classic. It's a classic green bottle. Like, mm-hmm. we used to make back in the old country. You know, Pottsville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. The old, old country.
Sorry.
No.
That's shade. That was
I don't know, but that's interesting to me that it's Yingling's only beer that is in a green bottle. So, for me, that's either, like you're saying, they're doing it as a ode to being traditional... Or they package these in there on purpose because they want that skunk.
Those are the only two reasons. I would say that they are doing both. They're probably doing it to get a little bit of that
flavor. I don't know how they classify this as a red lager. It smells like a Vienna lager.
Mm-hmm.
Amber / Vienna lager.
But that goes to show, we classify things all weird all the time. But yeah, that's a little skunky. I'll be real. I like our next beer better.
You don't like... The traditional Yingling?
I lager? Like the traditional Yingling, but I don't... There are better skunked beers out there. Heineken's a better skunked lager.
Ugh, okay. Nah. Heineken is...
It's not good. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying it's a better skunked lager, but if I'm going to have Yingling, which is fine, it's a perfectly fine beer, I prefer the Yingling Light.
I don't think... Actually, I've never had the Yingling Light, so...
Well, you're in for not much of a surprise here, sir.
But that, yeah. I mean, it does have that... skunk flavor like you're talking about that you would associate with a Heineken
mm-hmm.
or
a Carlsberg.
Yeah, or... Carlsberg's a good one. I saw the bottle in my head, but I couldn't think of the
or any of that Bohemia style or honestly Heineken's Dutch. So any of that like Dutch North German style.
I don't know. Beer. I kind of like you just have to know that that's what you're getting when you go into that beer. Because if you're surprised by it, I could see how you could be turned off by it,
but
you should know that those beers in those green bottles are going to have that slight funk characteristic.
And if you're not really certain what we're talking about when we're talking about the skunkiness, get a Corona.
And then drink a Heineken?
Well, both of them have the skunk to them.
Yeah.
When we're talking about skunk, we're not talking about like a...
Or Dos Equis Amber.
Oh, Dos Equis. Yes, because also in a green bottle. Also, if you find a beer in a green bottle, it's probably going to have a little bit of skunk to it. That's actually due to a chemical that's released in the beer that's interacting with light. That's why a lot of brewers went to dark bottles.
Photosynthesis.
No. Absolutely not. Oh, goodness. But no, they went to the brown bottles to prevent the skunky flavor. Because mm-hmm. the skunky flavor is actually a... chemical that's released that is very similar to cat piss.
So that's when, yeah, when people say beer taste, I have heard people say beer tastes like catty.
Yeah, that's because the chemical compound is, it's either the same or it is, in terms of the esters, which is what we would pick up on the aroma and the taste, is going to be identical to cat piss.
Which is ammonia?
It's an ammonia compound, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's why Heineken always does the green bottle, because when the rumor, of course, is when they ship it over, it mm-hmm. got skunked, and Americans... Because we were deprived of good beer, we were drinking nothing but pumpkin ales at the time. Loved it.
And we're like, man, you know what tastes better than pumpkin beer? This cat piss.
Cat piss. Delicious.
They drink Ram's piss. Why? Because, hell, if you can drink that, you can drink anything.
First beer beer fest. Okay. Mm-hmm. So next we have the Yingling Light. It is a light American amber. It's literally the exact same thing as the traditional lager, but it's going to be a little watered down. It's 4.5% alcohol, just like the traditional. 16 IBUs, just like the traditional. It's a sweet malt flavor with Cascade and Cluster hops.
Not Sluster.
Not Sluster, like my notes say. Now, it is only 99 calories. Now, this is a sharp departure from the 140 calories that the traditional lager is.
My God.
Oh, so many calories.
This is like the Mick Ultra of Yingling.
And it is designed for folks who don't want to sacrifice flavor in their light beer.
You'll get it eventually.
I will get there. It's going to get worse. And so this is why I think I like this better, because it's not skunked. But it's pretty much...
Yeah, because it's in a brown bottle.
Yeah.
Eh. I actually kind of miss the skunk.
It's almost identical to the Pilsner. I kept a little bit of that, and I'm like going back and forth between the light and the Pilsner.
Actually, the Pilsner's got more flavor, if you ask me.
I think you're right.
The Pilsner's hoppier.
Yeah.
The light, I mean, it's like you said, this literally just tastes like a watered-down version of the traditional.
Minus the skunk.
Minus the skunk, but it does, like, it actually, like, it tastes watery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it tastes like you just took the traditional... You took away that skunk factor, and then you cut it with, like, let's see, what's 100 out of 140?
30% water.
Yeah. I was going to let you do that.
I got you. You'd actually have to do like a concentration because to get the alcohol percentage the same.
Mm-hmm.
But beside the
point. Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah. But beside the point, it's not pure cut. It's not, you know, pure cut in half.
But that's what it tastes like.
It does. You're right. I guess I was thinking back. I had the light last night before we recorded.
Oh, changing your tune, huh?
Well, I'm welcome to it. But this is also why I prefer Yuengling in
changing
cans.
Your tune, huh?
I would never do that, Travis. But no, that's probably why I prefer it in cans, because it doesn't skunk.
Yeah. That's what we should do. Get a can of Yuengling lager see what it tastes like compared to the bottle.
Ooh, we should have. Well, maybe.
Do you have one on hand?
No, I don't keep Yuengling on hand.
Well, you said you preferred it out of the can.
I prefer it out of the can. But I don't keep it.
Well, I've got about 20 in my refrigerator in my shed right now.
Are they all bottles or cans?
They're all bottles.
Well, does us no good. No good, Travis. Well,
take it up with Costco because that's where I buy it. All right, that brings us to the last beer of the evening, the darkest beer of the evening. This is the Black and Tan, coming in a whopping 4.6% ABV.
Be still my liver.
10 IBUs. Is 60% porter and 40% premium beer. Modeled after the English Half and Half, which if you remember just a few moments ago when we were talking about their beer history, the Black and Tan replaced the Half and Half in 1986, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yep. And this is rich in color with hints of caramel and coffee. And this is also the first time I've ever had the Black and Tan.
Oh, really?
I'd literally denied only ever had the traditional lager in the Oktoberfest.
I had not had the Pilsner before, but I'd had everything.
Oh, that actually smells pretty nice.
It does. I've had the porter before. This, I've never had the premium beer. This reminds me almost exclusively of the porter.
And yeah, I don't know. Never seen the premium beer, never had the premium beer.
Yeah. And this is very much what I would expect from like a porter lager mix, which is pretty much what this is, as opposed to a traditional. I say traditional, but an American traditional Black and Tan. Never go to Ireland and order a Black and Tan. That is a bad idea, for the record.
Because it's Guinness and Harp?
No, because the Black and Tans were Irish that were conscripted to kill Irish during one of the Irish uprisings by the British.
So you may be chased out of the pub.
Correct.
Be safe and order yourself a Magners.
Yes, you can always order yourself a Magners. A lovely Irish cider. Personally, I'm going to get a Smittick's.
Actually, wait, is it Magners in Ireland or is it Bulmers?
Bulmers
in Ireland, yeah. That's right. I should know that.
Well, it's Magners here. It's the same cider, but yeah.
It's the same company.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to this. That does smell like coffee a little bit.
It really does. It's good coffee nose.
That's a lot thinner than just your everyday porter.
Yes.
So it's kind of, it's bready like a porter, but it's also that lager-like breadiness.
You know what it is?
What?
Porter Light.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, the porters are an ale, which is interesting. And then the premium beer, was that a lager as well? I assume it's a lager because everything they make is lager.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah. But yeah,
you're right. Interwebs.
To the interwebs.
Hold on a second and I'll find it for you.
Okay. But it does. Yeah. What I'm getting is a lot of that. It still has that good coffee tones to it, like a nice porter. But like you said, it's thin. Like, I guess a traditional English porter?
The premium beer is a Pilsner.
So it's a lager. So it's got lager yeast in it. So
Pilsner, Pilsner style brew. Pale malt character. Both 2-row and 6-row barley malt.
I just wish that was all porter, because it'd be better. But couldn't find the porter, so.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think, honestly, I've seen the porter in our market before.
I haven't seen it in years. It's been a while.
Yeah, I think you're right, because that the Black and Tan is just like a watery porter. But I could see, like, if it's hot out, that would be better than just drinking a straight porter. It's a lot lighter than a regular porter. It's kind of like it's two competing types of breadiness for me. Because you know how, like, a porter is kind of like that roasty, dark bread, malt flavor. And then the premium beer is your lager. So that's like a soda bread type of malt. And it's really, I don't know, it started out dark and then it got light and it finished kind of like watery. There wasn't much head on that at all either. It was paper thin.
Yeah.
And then it went away very quickly. That was probably second favorite of the night.
I was going to ask, Travis, what was your favorite beer for the night?
Of the five beers that we were able to find for Yuengling, the largest craft brewery in the country. That
it's about volume. It's not about diversity.
No kidding. When you only make 9 beers. We tasted over 50% of their portfolio tonight.
We have never done that with any other brewery.
I doubt we ever will again. I can't imagine there's another brewery where we will drink percentage-wise that much of their beer in one episode. Actually, you know, I think I like the Pilsner the most.
The Pilsner shocked me the most. It was one I actually would like because regular listeners know I don't typically prefer Pilsners. This one was good because it tasted a lot like a good version, a non-skunk version of the traditional lager.
Yeah, it was just a little. Yeah, it was brighter. It was hoppier. Yeah. That and then the Black and Tan was coming right up behind for me. Honestly, I'm most disappointed in the Yingling Light.
I'm not. I expected that. I expected it to be the same, pretty much. It's a bit more watery than, I guess I usually drink it later in the evening.
When you're drunk?
Yeah, so I don't notice how watery it is.
Yeah.
I was actually more...
You're drinking it when you need to rehydrate?
Yeah. I was actually more disappointed in the Black and Tan, how thin it was.
Well, that's to be expected, though, because it's a 60-40 split.
I know, but I was expecting more from that porter. Most Black and Tans are usually made with a stout anyway to give it a heft to it. I enjoyed the Pilsner in the Oktoberfest. I think you're right, though. The Pilsner's probably the best beer we had.
Mm. Gotcha. Who would have ever thought your beer of the night would be a Pilsner?
And this will be the last time my beer of the night is Pilsner.
You say that. You never know what we're going to get into.
Are you going to do like an all Pilsner brewery just to spite me?
We're going to do like an all Pilsner blind tasting. We're going to do a brewery that specifically specializes in Pilsners, Grisettes, and French table beer.
I like Grisettes.
Fine, then we're doing all Pilsner.
No, what will probably happen is that when we do our Pilsner episode, I'm just going to hate myself. Suck it up.
But we can find good ones.
Yeah, we can. But we're going to need to try some traditional ones.
Well, Andrew, final thoughts on Yingling?
It's cheap. You can get to it. It's not what I think of when I consider a craft beer. It is a very large brewery. I understand why people use it as a go-to beer. It is a good beer to find at a bar if you need to just drink something.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not my cup of tea, though. Not for any reason. I will gladly drink it. Don't get me wrong. I reach for that long before I reach for anything from InBev or Miller. I think those are the only two, really.
Molson.
Molson is Miller.
Molson Coors Miller.
Is Miller separate than Molson Coors? I thought Molson just bought Miller Coors.
I have no idea.
It used to be Miller Coors.
I'd have to look into that.
It's not worth looking into. Actually, I like Molson, though. I do love me some Molson and some Labatt's.
Labatt's.
It's fine. It is what it is to me.
See, I like Yingling, and Yingling was one of those ones where, like, that was probably one of the first beers I ever had that wasn't Bud Light, something like that. Like I said, my buddy Alex and his family being obsessed with Yingling and being from Pennsylvania, they love it. Like, that is their favorite beer. And so they always had it in the fridge when we were growing up. And I always keep it on hand in the fridge just because, like you said, it's cheap. They're very reasonably priced. And it's funny to me that they're not on the craft brewery side of the aisle when you go to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. They're over with Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, Coors, all of that stuff.
I don't think we talked about this, though, but they did have a reclassification a few years ago. They used to be classified as a macro brewery.
Hmm.
And then they changed the definition and they changed the mash rules is what it was. And Yingling qualified now as a micro, which is impressive that they haven't jacked up their price because microbreweries can charge much more.
But I think everybody knows, like the people who drink Yingling know what it is. And I think you would be very hard pressed to get people to pay more than they already do for that beer. Like, it's decent beer,
mm-hmm.
but it's nothing necessarily to write home about.
Yeah. So, like, for example, the Light and the Black and Tan, we couldn't find in singles. So, I bought two six-packs of both of them. That was $14. We have had beer, a single beer, for different tastings. That was
We have beers coming up that were over $20 for a bomber. No, and I think that is, like, it speaks to, like, Yingling is also one of those, like, yeah, you don't find it in singles.
No.
You have to buy a six-pack. And they don't do four-packs. You know, it's your traditional 6 or 12 case. And I think, honestly, like, the thing that shocked me the most when we were doing this episode was I thought they were ubiquitous, like,
yeah,
nationwide. And they're much more, like, regional
mm-hmm.
and East Coast.
I was shocked by that. I know they're out in San Diego. I guess when I travel west, I'm looking for the craft beer anyway. I'm not going to the pub and a bar and grabbing Yingling because I'm looking for, hey, what do you have around here that I physically can't get where I live?
Yeah.
But all in all, Yingling, it's fine. It is what it is. It's a good beer. It's a good brewery.
I'm sure all of our listeners on the East Coast have had Yingling at some point in their life.
Yeah.
And for those of you who aren't on the East Coast or don't necessarily see Yingling, I mean, like we say with all the other breweries, give it a try. Yeah. Yingling is one of those ones, like we said, it's good. It's a decent beer.
If you don't like lagers, though.
If you don't like lagers, go for the Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
Go for the Black and Tan or the Porter or the Pilsner.
Yeah. Everything you've named except for the Black and Tan and the Porter are pure lager.
Well, it's not the traditional lager and the light lager.
No, but I'm saying lager as a style. Like, Oktoberfest, Vienna lagers, Oktoberfest, Pilsner's lagers, those are all technically lagers.
Fine, drink the Porter and only the Porter.
And I got a smile on my face. Got you to admit it.
Or...
Honestly, it's fine beer. It's fine beer.
Or the Lord Chesterfield, if you can find it. That's a pale ale.
I've seen that. I drink that, though.
I'm going to make an assumption that that is almost 100% like...
A brewery release?
No, but it's probably just like within a few states up there, like around the brewery.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all I got to say about Yingling.
Yep, that's it. Appreciate you guys for listening. Tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to this week's Brew News.
If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to subscribe and give us a rating in whichever app you found us on. We value your feedback, and it also helps the show reach more viewers.
If you have any thoughts or suggestions for future breweries, or are with a brewery and like to join us, feel free to tweet at or follow us on Twitter, @brew_news. On Untappd, Travis is Mathernuts, and Andrew is Tuba Steve.
We're on Instagram, @brewnewspod, and you can visit our website, brewnewspod.com, where we will post our tasting and episode notes.
You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Anchor, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you use.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week to look at another exciting brewery.
Cheers! Have you ever wondered how you could join the Brew News crew? Well, swing over to patreon.com/brewnewspod and you can join us. We have 3 different tiers for all of our patrons. At the lager level, you earn early access to all of our podcast episodes. At the IPA level, you get early access to our podcast episodes, but you get special weekly beer tastings that are done by various members of the crew. And you get special video presentations, including our Beermas special. At the stout level, you get everything you get at the IPA level, but you also get to appear on 1 episode of the Brew News Pod, and when we have some swag, we'll send some your way. So feel free to swing over to patreon.com/brewnewspod, that again is patreon.com/brewnewspod, and join the crew.